Welcome to today's first live podcast organized by the Berkeley Institute for the Jewish Law and Israel Studies. Join us for virtual gatherings to stay up to date with topics related to Israel, Jewish law, thought, and identity, sometimes related to the current crisis and sometimes completely not. And today's episode is titled HaChaydak HaPoliti, which is translated from Hebrew to exactly mean the political germ. And we'll dive into the current political situation in Israel, the elections, the implications because of the coronavirus crisis. And we're lucky to have Professor Roy Peled, who's the Israel Institute visiting professor at the Berkeley Institute for Jewish Law and Israel Studies, and also a professor of administrative and constitutional law at the Chaim Strike School of Law, College of Management in Israel. Roy, thank you for joining us today. So just first, I'd love to hear how you are, how you've been passing the time in the past few days.
Well, it's an experience. First I need to say that I just came back from the supermarket and I managed to get toilet paper if anybody is in need. It's amazing just to see how things are, how fast things are unfolding. And it's honestly very interesting times. I mean, my dream now would be to be without a family and a huge budget to run all kinds of research these days and comparative law and how the different countries are facing this and how the different publics are responding. There's so much going on that is so interesting, but as it is, I do have a family and I don't have an endless budget. So we're just coping and living day by day.
After the initial shock of coronavirus, kind of everything's changing, everything's, you know, we're taking it day by day, but after kind of some of that has kind of become understood in our brains, I think many of us are starting to look also outside at the implications that this might have. And Israel, as most of you probably know, has already had 3 elections in the past kind of year and a month, and the first 2 failed to result in a new government. So we just wanted to start off and hear from you what the current political situation is. It's been 2 weeks since the third round of elections, and in theory, the government was kind of trying to form. So where are we now?
So really what's interesting about what's going on in Israel, I mean, on the one hand, this is a global pandemic. And as I just said, it's really, really interesting to try and be a comparativist and look how different countries are dealing with a very similar situation. On the other hand, Israel is, once again, a bit different, like it often is. Because in Israel, this, you know, unprecedented, huge health crisis intersects with a pre-existing, also unprecedented political crisis, constitutional crisis. So this is like a crisis upon a crisis, and it makes things much, much more complicated. As you know, and as you just mentioned, Israel already had 3 undecisive election rounds. So we do not have a government following 2. And there was a hope, not really based on anything, that the third round will be somehow different, but it wasn't. And where we are right now is that while public attention is sort of focused on the corona and how to fight it, there is a legally constitutional time frame unfolding. So the president had to give someone the task of forming a government. And the interesting and surprising thing was that Benny Gantz, the blue and white leader, actually got that mandate from the president to form a government, thanks to the fact that all 15 members of the joint list, the political party representing Israeli Arabs, supported him and recommended to the president to give him the mandate to form a government. That was very surprising, because at first it was thought that at least 3 of them, which represent like the more radical parts of the joint list, will refrain from doing so. He couldn't have done it without them. Once Orly Levy Abekasis, one of the Labor Party, or long story, but a politician that actually has her background in the far right-wing party of Lieberman, but lately joined Labor, would not recommend Gantz. So without, and he needed every vote, he needed at least 59 to overcome the 58 that the right wing has. Without her, it would have been tied at 58. So they actually chipped in and tipped the scale. in that sense. So where we are right now is that he has the mandate to form a government, but, and this is where the corona comes in, public attention is not there and people feel they're in time of crisis and they have a leadership, which is by and large, and I'm saying which is, I mean to Benjamin Netanyahu first and foremost, by and large getting, you know, at least somewhere between praise and approval of how he's managing this. And no one wants to think of, you know, shifting a leadership in the middle of this. So Gantz is anyhow has a next impossible task, but he really needs the time. So he now has 28 and possibly 42 days to do that. I'm saying possibly because after 28, he needs the president's approval to get an extension. He surely does not want actually to succeed in the coming week, for instance. He does not want to topple Netanyahu because that would create a lot of outrage. He is the number one person, I think, in the world, maybe except for residents of Italy, really, really wanting this virus to go away quickly so things go back to their political normality.
Thank you. That sounds like there is really a lot going on. And so meanwhile, I know that there is an interim government as we kind of navigate a lot of this. And there are some limitations to that interim government, I would expect. So I'm curious if there have been any kind of, you know, challenges presented in reacting to coronavirus specifically.
There are limitations and there are also advantages, if you can call them advantages, in the leeway such a government has. Because first of all, we need to say the first limitation of an interim government, and this is not just any interim government, it's an interim government that is around for, more than a year now, actually, since last February, when the Knesset dissolved itself and decided to go for elections. The government became an interim government, which is not supported by the majority of parliament. And it stayed so after the first, the second, and the third election round. So we now for more than a year have a government that is basically not based on popular support, that does not have legitimacy in that sense. That said, once again, the coronavirus is the savior of this government. So I read somewhere, someone yesterday wrote that the first person in the world identified to be saved by corona was Benjamin Netanyahu, because no one is really raising questions of legitimacy now, and people are sort of rallying behind their leadership to manage this. And the advantage of an interim government is that there are no political constraints. There are no coalition constraints, right? You don't need to make anybody happy. You don't need to pay attention to what anybody says. There is really no exchange of thoughts or different approaches within the government, which if you are the leader is great. There's no one challenging you. There's no one thinking, you know, maybe I'll need to give account for this later, so I should voice my dissent or my second thoughts now. It's a one-man show, and that's nice if you're the one man, although that should be worrisome, I think, if you're on the receiving side of the policy. So you have, for instance, think of the Minister of Treasury now, Moshe Kahlon, which is basically out of politics for a year. They were joking on the Israeli version of SNL last week that he doesn't even remember. He declared he's leaving politics a year ago, but he's still stuck in the Treasury just because he's stuck in the interim government. And he doesn't have any political future. He doesn't have anything to think about giving account to people. And he's basically almost non-existent, not playing a factor here. This brings us to a government very free to act, both politically because of all the reasons I just said, and then because of emergency powers we maybe will go into a bit later that the government has activated, which again, it could have done anyhow. Any Israeli government faced with a crisis, does have emergency powers like most governments around the world have. But in normal times, when you have a vocal opposition, but you also have, at least in a state like Israel that's based on a parliamentary system, you have some competition within government between the different parties. So you might have opposition within government. You have nothing of that now. Therefore, even when it comes to the basic idea of using emergency powers and to what extent to use them, things are, the government basically has a carte blanche. So I would say they are much better off, again, better as in looking at it from the government's viewpoint, being an interim government than they were just being a normal, functioning, legitimate government supported by popular vote like in any normal democracy.
Very interesting. Yeah, that sounds like a very complicated mixed bag. So zooming in a little bit more specifically, I'm curious to hear kind of what Israel has done so far to address coronavirus, what kind of policies have been in place, and if there have been any emergency powers that have been used on that front so far.
So I'll start by saying that, and I hinted to this earlier. So by and large, I think the public, the press are pleased with the way these things are being managed by the government right now. Israel, if you look at, like, you put the world on a spectrum from, let's say, the UK on one side, which took the relaxed approach, and to maybe South Korea on the other side, Israel is closer to the extreme end of the bar. Israel took rather aggressive steps to begin with. It de facto locked its borders. It didn't really lock them, but well, when I say borders, I mostly mean the airport, right? Because most of the other borders are locked anyhow. But it didn't legally close the border, and unlike here, but it very early on said that anyone coming from abroad will be subject to a 14-day self-quarantine, which, you know, doesn't leave a lot of people wanting to come in or leave and plan on coming in. So that was on very early. Anyone coming from abroad, anyone who's been to abroad, anyone who's been with someone who's been to abroad, you had already 10 days ago, I think, nearly 100,000 people in self-quarantine. Schools have been closed since Thursday, or I think it went into power Friday. And beginning yesterday, there has been sort of a partial lockdown. So most of businesses have been closed. People have been asked not to go, you know, to playgrounds and parks. All of the retirement communities and other like social services for the elderly have applied a sort of ban of any visitors. So in that sense, Israel went to you know, closer to the extreme end of the spectrum among governments. And to be honest, things seem to be under control. So the growth in the number of people identified with coronavirus is steady but dramatic. Israel today has 306, I think last I looked, people identified as carrying the virus, and no fatalities. There is some criticism on the fact that the health system, which generally Israel has a national healthcare system, which largely people are happy with and proud of, but has been sort of skimmed down in recent years by the government, and people don't think it can handle a massive outbreak. But that's more like in the, you know, high-end newspapers discussions. So those are the more benign means applied. But you mentioned emergency powers, and this is where things begin to be a bit frightening. One of the ideas the government adopted from South Korea is that you can trace people through their cellular phones to make sure that all those that should be self-quarantined, and especially those that have actually been identified as carrying the virus, do actually remain in their homes. And the government has declared it intends to, and that's where it got a bit complicated, to authorize the General Security Service to follow these people. And technically, the General Security Service can do that because Israel requires all cell phone companies, when they are licensed to operate in Israel, to acknowledge that under certain circumstances, in certain crises, they will give the General Security Service access to the phones of their clients. Now, the government at first, as it should be, asked the Knesset to authorize this, but the Knesset Special Intelligence and Special Forces Committee, headed by a former chief of staff of the IDF from Blue and White, actually refused to do this just as a rubber stamp. So they raised all kinds of questions and concerns and asked for answers. And then the government just said, okay, you know what? Let's forget about parliament. We'll do this through emergency powers. That is extremely problematic because Israeli constitutional law says if you can work through parliament, even in a time of emergency, you actually have to. You cannot use emergency powers as a substitute to parliament as long as parliament is still able of operating. So there has already been one petition to the Supreme Court filed yesterday. I know there will be another one filed tomorrow by the Association for Civil Rights in Israel. And we'll see where that goes. That is going to be very interesting. I should say there has also been rather wide-scale testing in Israel. So Israel is already tested. Actually, this you Americans should think about this. Israel has tested more than... The number of tests conducted in Israel is more than half that of in the U.S. in total, not per capita. So that's also going on. But the thing I would keep an open eye on is the use of emergency powers.
And I have a question kind of deviating slightly. I'm curious if there has been a policy put in place for people that are either undocumented or don't have access to healthcare. I know that that's, you know, a concern in regular times for some people, but in this time when it kind of will more clearly affect people that are, you know, the rest of the society, has there been any policy in place on that front officially?
Well, honestly, I don't know the answer is exactly what's going on now, but I'll just say in general. So the way it works in Israel, every citizen and resident has healthcare. If you're talking about the undocumented, they should have healthcare as long as they have an employer. So unlike Israeli residents and citizens who are covered by the state, all employers of foreign laborers are obliged to cover them with health insurance regardless of their legal status, even if they are undocumented. That shouldn't be a problem. Those that might be in real trouble are the undocumented that are also unemployed. And I honestly do not know the answer for that. I think right now, as sometimes happens in cases, I don't think they will have a problem getting tested because that's, you know, the state's interest to test them. But as far as getting treatment afterwards, that might be an issue. I hope it's not a widespread one because, I take that back. I'm not sure it's not a widespread one in among the refugees or the asylum seekers. It might be.
So back to the election process. I'm a bit curious to learn more about how this will impact the process going forward. So Netanyahu has called for a national unity government. Can you explain a bit about how that plays out?
Yeah, you know, calls for unity and solidarity are always good in these times, are always a winning political card. But when Netanyahu says unity, he largely means come unite with me. He doesn't intend to go and unite with anyone else. Gantz has replied to that actually with consent and has even indicated that they would agree to a national union government headed by Netanyahu for a limited period of time. But he did something actually quite smart. He said, well, if this is a time of crises and it's an emergency government, because that's what Netanyahu was talking about, national unity and emergency government for a limited period of time. Gantz said, well, then let's have all the factions of the parliament represented in this emergency government, which would include the joint list, as I mentioned, that represents the Arab Israeli Palestinians. Gantz now has an interest in keeping them on his side because without them, he just has a, you know, he's clearly outpowered by the right-wing bloc. That never happened in Israel, having the Arab parties within the Knesset, the government. Netanyahu immediately said, we will not have supporters of terror in the government. So right now it's a blame game, right? Everybody's trying to throw it on at the other side that there is no national unity government. Definitely most of the Israeli public wants that. And so that's why nobody wants to seem as the side that is sort of preventing a national unity government. If the virus is out of our way in 2 to 3 weeks and we're back to normal politics, then Gantz has a good shot on forming some sort of government, even a minority government, and ousting Netanyahu. If the virus is here to stay, throughout these 42 days, Gantz has to work out a government. I don't see that happening. I'm not sure it's going to happen otherwise even, right? I wouldn't put a lot of money on it. But as long as the public atmosphere is the one it is right now, it's working strongly in Netanyahu's favor.
If there's going to be any long-term impact on Israeli politics or constitutional law from the situation, in your opinion?
So the worrying thing about this, and I think that's the most important question, is the way the emergency powers are used. I mentioned the one about tracing people on their phones. There's another one in which the Minister of Justice applied a massive lockdown on courts, not including some emergency petitions to the Supreme Court, etc. But he did postpone most of processes happening in courts. And that itself is not worrying. The thing is, the whole idea that the Minister of Justice can suspend the courts. I don't think he can, by the way, and this again will go to the Supreme Court. I don't think he has the authority to do so. He and his ministry think they do. But what is important to notice here is this is part, an accelerated part of an ongoing process of checking the limits of power of government in Israel. And if we see under this situation that the limits have sort of been pushed forward and the government can do in an emergency time things that most of us thought it cannot do, still think actually, but if there is no actual response to limit them, then we will see these measures applied, you know, in future crises, and then other measures applied in other crises, or even these measures applied in semi-crises and things that, you know, look maybe tough but not as bad. So, you know, the abnormal will become the new normal, and the government, you know, any government that is sort of power hungry will go on to sort of push the borders further. So the long-lasting implications, I fear, are those of just easily shrugging off parliament and easily applying broad measures that compromise human rights just at the whim of the government's will. And therefore, it is really, really important to look what's going to happen in the coming days in the Supreme Court, in parliament. Are they going to stand on their back legs and sort of limit the government in what it's doing?
Thank you so much, Roy.
This has been episode 1 of the Berkeley Institute Live podcast series. Please tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for upcoming episodes.